Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Extraterritorial Asset Discovery Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 16, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Republic of Argentina v. NML Capital. The question in this case is whether post-judgment discovery in aid of enforcing a judgment against a foreign state can be ordered with respect to all assets of a foreign state, regardless of their location or use, as held by the Second Circuit, or is limited to assets located in the United States that are potentially subject to execution under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act of 1976, or FSIA, as held by the Seventh, Fifth, and Ninth Circuits. In an opinion issued by Justice Scalia, the court affirmed the Second Circuit by a vote of 7-1, Justice Sotomayor not participating, holding that no provision in the FSIA immunizes a foreign sovereign judgment debtor from post-judgment discovery of information concerning its extraterritorial assets. Justice Ginsburg dissented. To discuss the case, we have Professor Michael G. Ramsey, the Hugh and Hazel Darling Foundation Professor of Law and the Director of International and Comparative Law Programs at the University of San Diego School of Law, as well as Professor Thomas Lee, who is the Leitner Family Professor of International Law and the Director of Graduate and International Studies at the Fordham University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Ramsey.
I'll give just a real quick background on the how these cases got to the Supreme Court and then just a quick overview of what happened on Monday. So for those of you who haven't followed these cases, it started back in 2001 when Argentina defaulted on its sovereign bonds. And some of the bondholders agreed to a refinancing, but other bondholders sued Argentina in U.S. court in New York, which Argentina had consented to in the contracts covering the bonds. And on the merits of that case, the bondholders won their breach of contract action against Argentina. Argentina then refused to pay, and the bondholders sought two remedies from the district court. First, they wanted to get discovery of Argentina's worldwide assets so they could identify assets that they could potentially execute on to satisfy the judgment. Secondly, they sought an injunction against Argentina paying the refinanced bonds, that is, the people that had agreed to the refinancing rather than suing, before Argentina paid on the original bonds. The district court gave both of these orders, and the Second Circuit affirmed. Argentina then petitioned separately, two separate petitions, to the Supreme Court, arguing that the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act gave it immunity against both of the district court's orders. Supreme Court granted cert on the discovery order case, and I think probably the reason they did so was because there was a conflicting case out of the Seventh Circuit involving a case against Iran where the Second Circuit had held immunity for the sovereign. The separate case remained on petition, that is, the injunction case. So the discovery order case was argued back in April. On Monday, the Supreme Court released its opinion in that case, upholding the district court's order, rejecting Argentina's arguments. It also denied cert on the petition involving the injunction. So it was a double loss for Argentina on Monday. In the opinion that the Supreme Court delivered, it was 7-1. Justice Scalia wrote the opinion. Justice Ginsburg dissented. Justice Sotomayor was recused. In the opinion by Scalia, it closely follows the text of the FSIA. He says that the FSIA provides two immunities. One is from suit, but that one didn't apply because Argentina had waived it, and one from, quote, attachment, arrest, and execution of sovereign assets, which similarly, he said, did not apply. Didn't elaborate there, but I assume that because the discovery order didn't attach, arrest, or execute upon anything, but simply involved disclosure, it didn't fall within that immunity either. He then said, Scalia says, there is no third immunity, and so Argentina loses. And that's the end of the analysis. Scalia acknowledged that there were potential foreign relations implications, as had been argued by Argentina and by the United States government in support of Argentina, but he declined to consider them. He said that that's a matter that should be addressed to Congress, not to the court, and that the court simply applies the text of the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. So in sum, what we had was a very strong textualist read of the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, which in my assessment is very much in keeping with the way the Supreme Court has approached the act in past cases, cases such as Samatar versus Youssef, which was a couple years ago, another very strong textualist reading. And in very much in a classic Scalia style, I think, in the opinion, but he was able to persuade a large majority of the court to go along with a very strict reliance on the text and not getting into the potential policy implications. So I think for a FSIA practitioner standpoint, the message here going forward is that textualist arguments win the day for the FSIA, and that policy arguments need to be hooked to text and not free-floating, as Argentina's sort of were here. As far as post-judgment remedies, again, it's a very strong opinion against the sovereign. It leaves possibly open the fact that something in the federal rules of civil procedure might limit district court's discretion to have too wide-reaching an order, but they don't address that issue because they say Argentina didn't raise it in time. The FSIA, though, doesn't provide any protection, apparently, for sovereigns against discovery orders. Or I think the fair implication, and then this is sort of the final point I'll make and step aside, arguably from Argentina's perspective, rather than from a Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act practitioner's perspective, from Argentina's perspective, the bigger defeat was not the opinion, but it was the denial of cert in the injunction appeal, because this puts Argentina in a bad spot. If it's not allowed to pay on the refinanced debt before it pays on the original debt, then we either have to find some way around that, or it'll have to reach some accommodation with the original debt, or it'll be in a position of having to default on its refinanced debt, which would be a very bad thing for it. And although the Supreme Court, as always, didn't make any comment on the denial of cert, I think that the reasoning of the opinion they released follows on to the injunction case as well. Again, the injunction doesn't involve an attachment, arrest, or execution, which is the statutory language from the FSIA. And that being the case, the FSIA's text simply doesn't provide any protection for the sovereign. That's what the Second Circuit said, and I think the reasoning of the Supreme Court's decision on the discovery order makes that view seem quite sound as well.
I'm just going to bring 5 points, and some of them are going to be of interest to the practitioners as practice. Some of them are sort of bigger points about where jurisprudence in this area seems to be heading. One point is it's an incredibly textualist opinion, and I think that Professor Ramsey is correct that basically this seems to be the direction in which Supreme Court opinions on foreign sovereign immunity seem to be headed. There was an opinion called Samatar a couple years ago, that made the same kind of very textual analysis of the FSIA. And this case obviously has the same approach to the statute. On that point, I just wanted to say, you know, Scalia is a master textualist, but I didn't find his analysis altogether persuasive on a key point, and that is basically the way the statute is written. It says in 1609, you're immune from execution except as provided in the chapter in the rest of the statute. And 1610 says, shall not be immune from attachment in aid of execution or execution with respect to commercial activity. And, you know, if you think about it logically, it doesn't necessarily mean that the crucial question is with regards to who gets to determine whether or not something is commercial or non-commercial. And basically this opinion says essentially the district court does rather than Argentina. And I just wanted to point out that logically, if you put those two sections of the statute together, it's not absolutely clear that the question of who determines what's commercial or non-commercial is actually addressed by the statute, right? And I think that there's a little bit of looseness in the technical analysis of that provision. Now, that being said, the bigger point, over and over again in the opinion, Scalia says that the FSIA, the statute, is supposed to be the comprehensive statement on foreign sovereign immunity. And I think that sort of overstates the case. I mean, that's where the analysis seems to have been heading. But from a more historical standpoint, I don't think it's necessarily clear that when the statute was enacted, it was supposed to be sort of the statement that resolves all issues related to these kinds of foreign sovereign immunity questions, especially when they are so different from what was expected in the 70s, such as this case. And one sort of historical back note to that, I mean, in my own work, I've talked about how even though the current wisdom is that foreign sovereign immunity, and I'm quoting from the opinion, isn't always has been a matter of grace and comedy on the part of the United States, not a restriction imposed by the Constitution. It's pretty clear if you look at early constitutional materials debates that, in fact, many people thought, including Supreme Court justices, that foreign sovereign immunity was a constitutional issue. In fact, it was brought up a lot as a reason for saying state sovereign immunity was constitutional, and the argument we saw over and over again in the early days of the Republic was certainly the states have as much as the foreign sovereigns do, and they're constitutionally immune, right? So the modern understanding is the modern understanding, but it wasn't always the case, and I think that this presumption of textualism in with regards to the statute is somewhat nouveau rather than something that's always been there on this particular issue. The second point I wanted to make about the statute is we don't see anything about the presumption against extraterritorial effect, which we'd seen in discussions of another statute, the Alien Tort Statute, in the human rights context. And I think that there's a little bit of tension there because, you know, you have a U.S. law and the question is there a presumption against extraterritorial effect of a U.S. law, whether it's the Alien Tort Statute or the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act that allows a plaintiff to seek discovery in aid of execution of a judgment? And Scalia's opinion essentially says, and he says, well, you know, we're talking about discovery to find out where their property is, period. And so it makes logical sense to do that. But it's not altogether clear to me that if you're serious about the presumption of extraterritorial effect, you can't sort of do a little bit more thinking about that than there is in that opinion. So that's my second point. And then the broader points, and these were points that were raised by the United States brief, certainly there's a big concern about reciprocity. The U.S. is involved in litigation in other countries. What if someone orders discovery on U.S. assets in some other national court or as the nitty-gritty of these cases involve, it usually involves former U.S. officials like, say, Don Rumsfeld or something in has a brokerage account with Barclays or something and they walk in and say, have the same kind of discovery request. And I think that is, in my mind, a legitimate concern. I mean, the reality is that very few other jurisdictions have discovery as robust as the United States, and those that might and also happen to be major financial centers are friends of ours, and so it probably won't be a big issue, but certainly in theory and down the line, it could be a dangerous precedent to say that basically a national court in a country that is a major financial center has the power to order broad discovery with regards to sovereign property and whether it's commercial or not commercial.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.